This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Well, welcome to the Jason in the House podcast. I really do appreciate you joining me. You're going to really enjoy this because you've seen this guy on Fox News. His name is Nate Foy, and he's just an all-around good guy, incredibly talented in what he's doing, a rising star at Fox News. And look forward to having a good discussion with him about growing up, what life was like with his brothers. And I think you're really going to enjoy it. You certainly have seen him, and we'll see a lot more of him. And I think it'll be good discussion because he's just a super good guy. So hope you enjoy that. But we also always want to kick things off with just a little enlightenment about the news. And then, bring on the stupid, because you know there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. A couple of things happening here. One is this information about Jeffrey Epstein and the Epstein Island and all that. Well, supposedly Ghislaine, or however you pronounce her first name, Maxwell, supposedly is writing a tell-all memoir behind bars to combat what she calls misinformation. Now, I've got great hopes and expectations on this. I don't know why every name is not out there in the public and why this illumination of these stories and all these salacious stories that happened about this sex trafficking isn't out there. But she certainly seemed to be within proximity of what was going on there. So I think that'll be interesting when and if this news actually comes out. I also hope you saw, in the midst of all the big discussions this past week on the border and on the escalation of violence there in the Middle East, the killing of the three United States servicemen and the 34 people that were hurt and injured. That number may have gone up since I recorded this. But in addition to all that, I really do hope that there are other parts of the news and things that we actually are paying attention to. And a couple quick ones that I want to just highlight. We had these deranged climate activists who threw this soup at the Mona Lisa. Now, this keeps happening. These climate activists seem to think that if they can destroy works of art, some of the most valuable pieces of art on the planet, that somehow, some way, that's going to draw attention to their plight, as they call it, and somehow, some way, get us to think that climate is more important and therefore they'll stop holding us ransom by stop destroying the art. I totally don't get this understanding to go after the Mona Lisa. Now, hopefully it was fully protected, but if you didn't see this, it was really bad. It was really bad. If you didn't see this, it was bad. It was really, really bad. And I really do worry that this is going to continue unless you really prosecute these people to the fullest extent. The Department of Justice is now going and looking at the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, on the sexually harassment of a dozen women. This, according to CNBC, this is the allegation. This is what they're looking at. Don't know where it's going to go. But this story just continues to have legs, and more attention will be given to it. And it should. And it should. It really should. Leah Thomas is reportedly seeking legal avenues to overturn regulations on male swimmers competing with women. Oh, my goodness. I mean, this is what Riley Gaines went through. If you listen to last week's podcast, and if you haven't had a chance, I hope you get to. But Riley Gaines and her story, what she went through, now legal. Leah Thomas is out there trying to change the rules. I think it has to do with the Olympics and all that. But, oh, my goodness. There's a lot happening out there. Again, immigration, tier one issue, enforce the current laws, Mr. President. That's what you can do. You can lock down the border and you can do it right now. And I've talked about this frequently on this podcast, but it really is, we're talking about human beings here and they need to do the right thing and they haven't done it and they need to. Anyway, lots of other things happening in the news. I also want to highlight the stupid because you know what? There's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere. All right, I'm going to the United States Navy, who is again lowering requirements for new recruits as it struggles to meet requirement goals. This was in the New York Post. It was in a lot of different publications. But the way to actually grow recruitment, which is down by tens of thousands of needed recruits to go into our military services, and this one specifically for the United States Navy, is not to get rid of the requirement for having a high school or GED degree. And then offering another test where they have to pass a minimum. No. Let's help raise the bar. And they had released reduced, at least in one of the branches of the military, the physical requirements because evidently America's kids are too fat and too out of shape. But you know what? If you want people to do more push-ups, you're going to have to get them to do more push-ups. We should be raising the bar. And you know what? It starts at the top. It starts with the commander in chief, because a lot of people, I think, are worried about how our United States military is treated and supported. And they need to know that they're loved and cherished. And this is a great career and a great way to go. But lowering the standards yet again, thinking that, oh, we're going to get more people in, I don't know if that's going to do it. I really do worry about that. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is a media critic who says the success of the movie Oppenheimer means Hollywood is returning to the troubled era of oversaturated macho dad movies, according to a FoxNews.com story. Are you kidding me? We need good stories and good storytelling. And this is an important story. But, you know, they kind of say the same thing about Maverick and Top Gun. Why this movie, quote unquote, critic is going out there and criticizing it because it's going to be a macho dad movie. Oh, my goodness. It's good storytelling. You know what? Men, women, they like these movies because they're really well done and they're important stories and they're entertaining. That's what it's all about. That seems pretty stupid to me.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
All right, so it's time to bring on Nate Foy, a great guy. I had a chance to get to know him here at Fox. But I really wanted to dive a little deeper, learn more about him and his upbringing, because you're going to see him and see a lot of him here at Fox. So let's give a shout out and a ring to Nate Foy.
All right, Nate, we got you on the phone. I am so glad to be connected with you.
Me too.
You've had a very long day today.
I have.
And you have a little vacation coming up. And I my guess is I'm the only thing standing between you and really nice warm weather.
You are the last thing I'm doing before I'm going home and packing my bags and going down to Florida for, it was supposed to be a fishing trip in the Everglades with my family, and we got some bad weather in Florida this weekend. So I think that we're going to have to reschedule the Everglades fishing. But my brother just moved down to Lake Worth from Canada, and he's a big fisherman, so I think we're going to check out some of his local spots and see what we can catch.
So what is the ideal Nate Foy? This is my perfect vacation. What is that?
Well, so it's funny. I'm the world's worst fisherman, and I'm about to go on a fishing vacation, and the reason why is because I love spending time with my brothers. And you know,
How many brothers you got?
Three brothers, four boys in the family, no sisters. If you count my dad, you know, it's five boys and then my mom. Right. So, and you know, brothers who at times were not the easiest for them to raise. So it was definitely a locker room growing up. And couple of my brothers really love fishing. It's not really my thing, but like I said, I love hanging out with them. So we're going to do a little bit of that. But my ideal vacation is more what's going to happen on the back end, which is more golf. I'm a big golf and beach guy. So, you know, I give them what they want. And then in the second half of the vacation, I'll get what I want.
Well, you're a very sports-oriented guy. I mean, most people are... How surprised when people see you now that you've been on Fox so much, they're recognizing you, they see you wherever in the airport. I mean, I see you on the network, you're like everywhere, and it's usually cold and it's usually something horrific that's going on, you know, but which is the nature of what you do now. But when people see it, do they look at it and say, wow, you're a lot taller than I thought you were going to be?
That is generally the first thing that people say. Surprisingly, I've been told that I look younger in person than I do on TV.
But you're already pretty young compared to me.
I'm 31, about to be 32, but I'm going gray. So yeah. I look older than I am. And then with the beard and the height, I'm 6'8". I think all that plays into it. But it's actually one of my favorite things about working for Fox is that I get recognized way less than I used to. Because in local news, you're the guy in that community. Everywhere you go, everyone knows who you are.
Right.
Whereas in New York City, no one cares, which right. is phenomenal.
Right. But when you go out and about, and you know, it's interesting because, you know, once upon a time I used to be in Congress, yeah. which meant I was on some of the other networks. And so when I bump into people, it wasn't always necessarily a happy moment. Now that I've been on Fox for years and not on those other networks, usually when you bump into somebody, it's a happy event.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's much better. The people that wouldn't be so pleasant generally aren't watching what you're doing anymore. So you kind of just keep doing your thing. And the people who notice you love you.
All right. So let's go back. Let's go back to I was born in, because I want to hear about young life with your three brothers and your dad, kind of the other brother that's there. Where were you born? Were you first, the oldest, youngest? Where are you at in that mix? And what was life like growing up?
So I'm number three. We grew up in a relatively small town, at least by my standards. It was like about 30,000 people, a town called Westboro, Massachusetts, 45 minutes outside Boston. Very normal upbringing, competitive with the four boys. We played a lot of street hockey. My dad was a college basketball player. He played at Boston College. He was actually on he was on the point shaving team. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was a little controversial. Not that I was totally following it, but it was notorious enough that I did hear about it.
So you know, Goodfellas, Jimmy Burke, and Henry Hill. Those were the guys who they found three players on my dad's team, and they were paying them money to shave points off the game. And it was when my dad, I want to say he was a sophomore, he might have been a freshman. My dad was not taking money from the mobsters, but three players were. They got caught. The news broke when my dad was a senior. He was the captain his senior year, and he was involved in the investigation and the whole thing. They made a ESPN 30 for 30 about it. So anyways, that's just sort of a fun fact.
Okay,
about
your dad
family, but
like super athletic. Is your mom athletic?
She is. She didn't really play organized sports, but she was the town champion tennis player at the local club.
Wow.
So
she's athletic.
She's very athletic. And my two older brothers, really athletic, which helped me a lot because trying to keep up with your older brothers, you know, just competing against them every day made competing against...
Are you the tallest?
I am the tallest, but in a fight to the death, I'd probably come in third out of four.
Third out of four?
Yeah.
As long as you're not dead last.
Yeah. It's honestly an age order. My second oldest brother, I think, might win, but my two oldest brothers would definitely take me. And I still think I could take my little brother.
You don't want to admit that out loud, Nate.
I'm going to put this blasting on the speakers next time I go home on this vacation. I'm going to play this podcast and see how my brothers react.
It won't be much of a vacation, but yeah, I hear you. But okay, so you're going up, you're playing sports. But as you get older, was there any sport that you gravitated to? I mean, you're tall, right? So
Basketball was definitely the one. And I had a particularly close relationship with my dad. I still do. Mm-hmm. And I just really wanted to be like him. And I played ice hockey, but I was the only one, surprisingly, who played basketball. My two older brothers were obsessed with hockey, so I followed in their footsteps. But because of my connection with my dad, I also played basketball. And then because they were both winter sports, I had to pick one. And when I was in seventh grade, I picked basketball. So that was my sport throughout high school. I was a pretty good high school player, but not good enough to get any D1 offers, and ended up going to the University of Miami. Didn't have any friends when I first got there, so I committed to trying to walk on the team, and came pretty close. I had, you know, a really good tryout, had a moment with Coach Larrañaga at the U where he was pretty much just asking me why I didn't play college basketball, what my grades were. And I called my dad afterwards and I was like, I think I actually might have made the team. And no walk-ons made the team that year. But funny enough, I hosted this alumni event in New York City a couple months ago, and I interviewed Larrañaga on stage in front of, you know, like 300 people or so. And I told him, I'm 6'8". Everywhere I go, people are asking me why I didn't play college basketball. And I'm hoping that tonight in front of everyone, you can tell me. And he was super gracious about it. He told me it was the biggest mistake he's ever made. But the truth is, he didn't remember me. So I guess I didn't leave much of an impression.
If you're the basketball coach at a big university like that, you see a lot of 6'8 guys, right?
That's the thing. Everyone's always like, I don't understand. You just turn around and put the ball in the hoop. You're so tall. When you get to that level, there are at least two guys on the court on each team that are taller than you.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're like a forward. And that was my problem, was I wasn't fast enough to defend the forwards or the guards, and I wasn't strong enough to bang with the bigger guys. Right. So I couldn't guard anybody, but offensively, I like to think I was pretty skilled. I think I could score, but I couldn't defend at that level.
Do you think if you grew up in like Southern California or Florida or something, like, you'd be into beach volleyball?
Possibly. I think that it would have taken someone in my family sort of guiding me in that direction.
Right.
Because, like I said, I got into hockey because my older brothers got into hockey, and I got into basketball because of my dad.
But I see a lot of 6'8 hockey players, right?
Well, that's actually the big mistake that I made, was I think that if I did focus on hockey, and my dad actually thinks I was the worst hockey player he's ever seen, so he'll laugh listening to this, but I think I had some potential in hockey, because 6'8 standing up, you're 6'10 on skates. You have, you know, extra long stick.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get around someone like that if you're a defenseman. So being 6'8 in hockey is sort of a difference maker, whereas in basketball, it's everyone's that tall, you know,
yeah.
So it doesn't differentiate you.
Yeah, it's, you know, I met Wayne Gretzky a couple times, actually. And what a great honor. I mean, one of the greatest guys ever to play, you know, hockey. But, you know, he wasn't the biggest guy.
About hockey.
He was amazing. I mean, he was like 5'11", 6 feet, maybe. You know, I'm 6'2", so I thought, wow, I thought he was going to be – he was so bigger than life. But then when he was standing right there with me, I thought, he's not a huge guy, but he was so quick.
Yeah.
He was so quick and so smart. And so he could see the game unlike anybody who's ever played
before. Yeah, he skated to where the puck was going rather than where it already was. But there's some players like Brad Marchand on the Bruins. I'm not sure exactly how tall he is, but I think he's like 5'6", 5'7". He's tiny. And he's one of the better players in the league.
They can move.
It's unbelievable. And
all right.
Hold on. I know that this is your podcast, but while we're on the topic of sports, I saw that you were the place kicker at BYU.
Yeah.
And I've never talked to a kicker before, and I'm interested because you talk to all these like high school soccer players, and they're like, oh, I could do that. And the question always is, with, you know, 11 guys barreling down on you, can you still do it? What is that like? How was that, dealing with that pressure as the kicker? Because you're kind of on the sidelines, and then you just get brought in at the most crucial moments of the game. I'm interested in the psychological process of being a place kicker.
It's really interesting, because when I was playing soccer growing up, I was usually the guy the coaches would look at and say, hey, we got a penalty kick. We got to make it, and it takes a little poise to do that. Chaffetz, get over there. And I don't remember ever missing one. And I just had this confidence, and I don't know where it came from. I think my parents kind of instilled with me, and so they always kind of said, look, you can do whatever you want to do. If not you, who's going to do it?
Yeah.
Like, you think there's some magic, you know, something? I didn't kick a football until I was a junior in high school. And it was only because they asked all the guys on the soccer team to come try out, And I said, yeah, I'll try that. So I got out of my comfort zone, tried it, and that was actually turned out to be pretty good. My first game, I missed a really long field goal, and I started getting recruited. And I thought, what if I actually made one of these?
Yeah.
Maybe I could, you know, and then focus determines reality. But, yeah, there's a lot of guys that can kick it far. The hardest part about place kicking, and not to turn this podcast into a kicking seminar, but is can you do it when there's 65,000 people yelling at you? You've been sitting at the side on the sideline for an hour and a half and haven't kicked the ball, and then you got 25 seconds to run out there, get your poise, take that snap and the kick. You have 1.35 seconds to get that kickoff, and can you get it 11 feet high, 5 yards from where you're standing? That's the hardest part, is yeah. the trajectory. Like, a lot of guys kick it far, right? You know, the pros, the college, you got to kick it high and be right on the spot. And I somehow figured out how to do that.
Well, I'm sure that the focus and composure prepared you for the things that were to come.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of fun. You know, so speaking, being on an air. Look, you've been on air enough, right? But you also remember your first time, right? The first time the light goes on and you got to go live and they tell you you've got 1 minute, you know? And you got to cover all this stuff.
First time at Fox
stuff.
Or first time ever?
Yeah, both, right? You
yeah.
get a little, your blood pressure's moving a little bit, right?
Oh, it still happens to me, depending on what the story is. But
what's the hardest thing? What's the hardest? I mean, like, I saw you today, you were doing stuff about Trump in the courtroom, and there's so many moving parts to it.
Yeah. Sometimes that actually helps me. So this story specifically, I've been covering it, so I know it pretty well. But when so many things are coming at me, it actually helps me get out of my head, because I'm in a zone of taking information in. Mm-hmm. It's harder for me when nothing's happening and I have 3 hours to be like in my head, well, what if I said it like this? Would it be more effective if I changed this word? And then I can just run circles and, you know, go down a whole list of hypotheticals. And then you start playing mind games and you got to get your poise and your focus. But it's actually easier for me when a lot of things are coming at me. My first time ever being on air, kind of a funny story. So I went to the University of Miami again. I got involved in the student TV. And there was this former SportsCenter anchor called Neil Everett. And I tried emulating his style. And he kind of like yells a little bit. And I wanted to be like that, but I was so nervous that it came out as like a whisper scream. So I was like, hello, everyone. Welcome to Sports Desk. And I watched it back. It took me probably 2 years before I was no longer embarrassed to watch my own work. So it took me a little bit. And like I said, I started in sports, and then I got my career started in St. Joseph, Missouri. I've never met anybody from a smaller market. At the time, it was market 206. I think now it's 201. There's only 211 of them. So I was there.
By the way, just a little side note, asterisk. That's where my mom was born. My mom was born in St. Joe, Missouri. Yep.
No way.
Yeah.
Where the saltine cracker was invented, I believe.
Yeah. I remember she went back to visit and came back and brought me an Ozark Mountain Daredevils cassette tape. That's how old I am. And like, it's so funny.
I don't even know what that is, but there's
an all-time band. Yes.
Okay. There's very few.
I'll get you one. It's on Spotify. It's like anyway, sorry, keep going. St. Joe, Missouri. Got a fond place in my heart, and I actually know where it is. So keep going.
So St. Joe, Missouri for a year, and then I got a job in Fort Myers, Florida, still doing sports. And after about a year and a half of doing sports in Fort Myers, I made the transition to news.
Why? I mean, look, you got brothers, you got a dad, you pension for it. Why switch from sports to news?
So it was a combination of factors. Number one, I felt like I was losing sort of my hobby in my job, where I love being a sports fan, and I was missing Boston Celtics games to go to some high school volleyball game that I didn't actually care about, you know? So
all right, that's pretty funny.
So there was that aspect of it.
Right.
And then also the storylines in sports often just repeat themselves, and it's just a different person or player the coaches give you the same answers, and you're just plugging in a new name. So it gets a little bit boring. I think that if I had more success quicker in sports, I think I would still love to do like a national sports show. But covering high school sports was just a grind. And like I said, I was missing all the professional sports that I cared about covering the high school sports. So I didn't love that as much as I thought I would. And then, you know, also, I honestly, I'd be lying if I told you that I wasn't just looking at opportunities, and there were more opportunities in news. So that played a role initially. But what I found once I actually made the transition to news was that I like it so much more because it's changing all the time and I'm learning so much. I think that I maybe was resistant to grow up a little bit. I kind of wanted to just make jokes and have fun and talk sports for the rest of my life. And then when I just kind of made that leap of faith and got into news, it kind of forced me to learn about more about how the world works and about history and, you know, politics. And I'm so grateful for that experience. And that's one of the best things about now, you know, all these years later at this level, getting to experience so many different things and cultures. I was just in Israel, and it's such a blessing to get paid, to travel the world, to learn how everything works, to meet so many interesting people, and to tell their stories. It's an absolute dream come true.
No, I mean, look, this is why you're one of the rising stars at Fox, because you do it in a positive way. Like, what I mean by positive, it's like so many people are like, oh, this is so dire, and they, like, you know, but you just do it with just the right balance of a smile on your face, but knowing that you've covered the story. It's just good. I really admire what you do and how you do it, because I know that doesn't just happen. Like, it comes because you're passionate about it and you care about it.
Thank you.
So, but go back to making that transition. So, I'm sorry, you're in sports, but your first news job was?
In Fort Myers. I was the weekend news anchor for the morning show at NBC2, WBBH.
And you start doing that, and then moved up the food chain, or do you go to another market after that?
No, I made the jump from Fort Myers to here.
Wait, how did you do that? That's quite a leap from weekend Fort Myers, Florida to you know, New York, Fox News.
So Fort Myers has produced a lot of really, really good talent. Mm-hmm. But I do think that I'm the first one who's gone directly from Fort Myers. And it was a combination of a lot of factors, and luck was certainly one of them. One of my friend's dad owns a restaurant in the Palm Beach area, and a Fox executive came in. And he found out who she was, and he just showed her my resume reel on his phone. And he was like, hey,
really?
Take a look at my son's friend. He's a news anchor in Fort Myers. What do you think? And she was impressed, and she was like, I actually really like him. Like, put me in touch with him. And then I got an email, and this was actually for Fox Weather. And then I initially went through the interview process for Fox Weather, and somehow talked them into giving me an opportunity on Fox News. And it just sort of worked out perfectly. They took a chance on me. It's not very normal for someone from Market 53 to go up to the national networks. Generally, you come from, you know, local LA or Dallas or Philly or something like that. And they took a chance on me, and I'm trying my hardest to prove them right.
Well, you certainly have in my book, that's for sure. And I
thank you.
Got to see you around in the you know, the Fox office. We've been trying to get together on this podcast, but you're running off to some murder scene or something's going on. Let's go back to that process part again, because I actually, that was kind of interesting. You know, my experience on air is if I overthink it, if I try to write it out, if I try to spell it out and then regurgitate it, I always trip up.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what I do best on is knowing the material, having a general outline of what I want to say, and then just letting it rip. It comes off so much more naturally. But, I mean, you're doing hard news, and a lot of it has some complexity about, you know, dates and times and years. And Do you write that out? Do you put the outline together? Or are you just, you know, all of a sudden they'll say, hey, we're coming to you live. You got 2 minutes.
So it depends on the show and it depends on the story. But some shows prefer you to sort of write a script and get everything approved. And in those shows, you need to stick closer to a script and veer more towards memorization. And those are the shows that I get more nervous, to your point, because if you mess it up and you get off track, then it's really difficult to get back on track. Mm-hmm. But I have found that the hardest thing is that we have to hit a certain time limit. So the report is supposed to be a minute and 30 seconds, and the producers are timing the show and they want
right,
to get the next guest in before the commercial break. And you don't want to, you know, be an inconvenience. So if I commit to just talking off the top of my head because I know the material, I think that I come across better. But sometimes I might talk for 2 minutes, I might talk for a minute and 15. And so it's striking a balance of sort of ad-libbing to the point where you feel like you're being authentic and you feel like it comes across as you want, but then keeping it structured enough so that you know that you're not going over the time limit. That's something that I work on literally every single day.
Do you practice that?
I experiment a little bit. And then there's times where, you know, like today, for example, during the Trump trial coverage, mm-hmm. there were numerous hits where they just called me and they were like, Nate, get on camera right now. We're coming to you. And on a hit like that, it's actually fun because you don't need to hit any certain time. You'll just talk and then the producer will say rap when they want you to stop.
Right.
What
I found is like different shows have different personalities, right? So some shows, when they say rap, you better be done in the next 4 or 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And other shows, a rap means, yeah, let's get around to that in the next 20, 30 seconds.
You totally. Know,
it totally depends.
And then when you get the second rap, generally they have a very different tone.
A little bit louder, a little bit more.
Angrier.
Did you hear me?
Yeah. Like,
did you hear what I said? Because I said rap.
Yes. You never want the second rap.
Yeah. Okay, I've had many second raps, so maybe I should be learning from that. The volume increases, the projection increases.
I'm like,
they must have heard that through my microphone because it was so loud in my ear.
Yeah, you're in the penalty box when you get when you get the second rap.
That's pretty funny. And then there are other times when, you know, you have so much time. What was the case? There was one where you were out in the field. I think it was somebody who escaped from prison or something like that, custody.
Yeah.
Or there was a big, no, there was another one where there was a big shooting and they were looking. It was like a manhunt for this guy and everybody was locked indoors. You're outside. And they kept coming to you time and time and time and time again. And, you know, but it's live. I mean, that you're watching breaking news as it's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a time. So this was the Maine mass shooting recently.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
And there was like a helicopter camera and everyone was staying indoors because the guy killed himself. But no one knew that at the time. So there was a gentleman who was on his knees with his hands behind his head and police were closing in on him, but it was just the guy going for a walk. And we didn't know that. So this is all playing out on live TV and you're wondering, is this the guy? But what makes it more difficult from a reporter's perspective is that we have a delay and I'm watching it on a phone. So like, I'm looking in the camera. The phone is to the side of the camera. There's a delay. So sometimes I worry about that delay and not being able to react at, you know, an appropriate time.
Right.
But you just do the best you can. And it ended up, like I said, not being the guy. And then you just keep reporting and keep following every twist and turn of the story.
You're listening to Jason in the House. We'll be back with more of my conversation with Nate Foy right after this.
So what's the dream job? I mean, you're still so young. You're still pretty fresh at Fox. How long have you been at Fox now?
Coming up on 2 years. February 14th will be 2 years.
So, like, what is the, like, okay, at some point, this is what I'd really like to do.
So, honestly, I'm living my dream job right now. Eventually, I would like to anchor. and I want it to be at Fox. You know, this is exactly where I want to be. I feel like I can accurately report on the news here. They give me the freedom to tell the story how I want to, and in a way that I believe is accurate and fair. And this is where I want to be, and I hope to one day be one of the anchors here.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I can totally see that happening. So, you know, I love the variety of things that come about with Fox, and I do love the news. Now, look, I'm on the opinion side. The way it generally works is you have the opinion group, and then you have the news division, and so. But you know, you're kind of involved and engaged in both. At least the opinion guys are, and when they're doing news, they're going to a guy like you, right? So, but I just love breaking news. I love the variety of it. I love that you wake up every day and somebody's, we always say in this podcast, there's always somebody doing something stupid somewhere, right?
Yeah.
So there's no shortage of material of what's happening. And yeah, that's what makes it so dynamic. And also I think so compelling to watch. Now, do you like, do your parents like watch? Do they, your buddies watch, your brothers watch? Do they call and say, Nate, that was so bad? Or, you know, that was really good.
They do.
Son.
They do. My, I don't think they will call me. I generally just don't hear anything if I sort of mess up a little bit. and then when I perform well, I'll get a call or a text. My dad watches all the time. My mom really doesn't watch any TV, but when she hears my name, you know, when the anchor says Nate Foy, and then my mom will come running from the kitchen. She's always writing one of her books or something. And then she runs in and she loves watching it as well. My grandma is 92. She's obsessed with Fox News. She has been for a long, long time. So she's very, very excited every time that I come on. My buddies, I wouldn't say watch. They definitely watch, but not all day like my dad and
right.
my grandma do. They're more into Instagram and like they'll see the post where I'll share some of my stories on Twitter and stuff, and they're also watching when they get back from work. So if I have a story on Special Report, I'll hear from them, or they'll send me a picture of them at the gym and seeing me on the TV and stuff like that.
Oh, that's fun. Now I have the total opposite experience. So when I screw up, I hear about it, and I hear about it from everybody. People that claim to be my friends, I don't even know, will start telling me, hey, buddy, you screwed up. But especially my friends. So I'm gonna fess up to one that I don't know that I've talked about before. And this was before I was on Fox News. But when I was in Congress, I had done this investigation into Benghazi. I was the first member of Congress went to Libya. And I was pretty passionate about this. And there were a lot of people out there I felt not necessarily telling the full and compelling truth. And I was on CNN and I was debating, they had me on with Wesley Clark. He used to be the NATO commander, right? So he's a way, way up the high in the food chain in the military. And he and I are both on on Fox, and I'm getting pretty passionate about this. And Nate, I out of the blue, I tried to say fire, fight. I said, they were in the middle of this firefight. And I accidentally said, fire fart. And the moment I said it, it was not seconds later, my phone, which was in my pocket at the time, buzzing, just would nonstop buzzing. And I just knew that it was going to be Trey Gowdy, my other colleague, and my brother, and it could not stop buzzing. And they were all, dude, you just said fire fart. And I tried to deny it. I tried to say, no, listen closely. Like, we heard you. We know exactly what you
said. Did you immediately have the clip and go back and watch it?
Oh, my gosh. They let me know. So it was always, I can always count on Trey Gowdy or John Ratcliffe or somebody. If I screw up on anything, they are going to send me some sort of clever, you know, meme or something to let me know instantaneously that that was not necessarily as smooth as it should have been.
Hey, that's a true friend, though. You know, they can tell you those things.
Oh, what goes around comes around, because I'm telling you, I can go after Gowdy with the best of them, and we have a lot of fun doing that. And if you could see the texts, maybe a little childish at sometimes, but pretty funny. Ratcliffe's also in that mix, and sometimes Senator Tim Scott will let me have it as well. But it's kind of fun because they are friends, and you know, you do interact with them,
and they've walked the walk. So
they've all been there.
Yeah, my friends are all in tech sales, so I think that's why they're just like, all right, well, we'll let them off the hook.
Yeah, it really is. It really is fun along the way. All right, so you're off to this great trajectory, but we want to get to know you a little bit better. So before you start relaxing and go on this fishing, golfing extravaganza in what hopefully is warmer weather than what you're doing right now, I got to ask you a few more questions.
Of course.
All right. First concert you ever attended?
First concert I ever attended was The Police at Fenway Park.
At Fenway Park? That's really iconic.
Really, really good concert. It was late in my life. I didn't go to a concert until, I want to say I was like 16 or 17.
Yeah, no, I was older in life too, and I was like a senior in high school before I ever went to a concert. My parents didn't want me to. I think they felt like, hey, it was going to be a bad influence. I remember the Cars. Remember the Cars?
Yep.
I so desperately wanted to go to a Cars concert. My parents were like, absolutely not. And the report back was, all my friends are totally getting high. And it was probably a really good decision by my parents to not let me go to this Cars concert.
But
so,
you got to go to the legends while you can. My first, at least among my first concerts. So The Police were the first one. And then I went to Tom Petty. And I've been to Bruce Springsteen multiple times. And those, you got to get those guys before they're gone. And now there's other artists that I like, but like, you know, I'm a little embarrassed to admit, but I do like Justin Bieber. And a Justin Bieber concert wouldn't be nearly as good as a Tom Petty concert or a Bruce Springsteen concert.
No, I could have lived my whole life and not known that about you, but I will not be going to a Justin Bieber concert.
Don't hold it against me.
I will, probably will. I'll pull this one out when I need to. But especially when you're comparing to Tom Petty and everything else.
Well, I was saying
right,
that I'd much rather see Tom Petty because there's more instruments. It's more, I mean, I do think that Bieber is very talented, but the sounds
don't
in
keep
his
digging. You know,
the sounds in his
hole,
songs.
Just stop digging. Just
it's
stop.
More modern pop is different. It's not as good live as classical rock.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Because I asked this question, and I'm really, first of all, I've never had the same answer from any of my guests. They've all been to a different one. And the second thing is, I'm really surprised, like, who's into what music. Like, Mark Thiessen, who you see on the air all the time, he's like a massive, he goes to like 50 to 60 concerts a year. He flies over the country to go to concerts, all kinds of concerts. Would have never expected that. So,
my favorite concert I've ever been to, I got to plug this guy, Sam Fender. He's British. He's not that big in the United States, but he's pretty much like a young British Bruce Springsteen. You should check out, Sam Fender. His album came out, I think, last year. It's called 17 Going Under. Highly recommend. He played a show in New York. He was unbelievable.
Good tip. I didn't know that. That's good to know.
I got to redeem myself now that I told you I like Bieber. Go home and listen to Sam Fender, and you'll be like, okay, Nate has good taste in music.
There's a question later on in this series that you can redeem yourself, and if you miss that one too, that's two strikes. So
okay,
we'll keep going. What was your high school mascot?
The Rangers. Westboro Rangers.
I like that. That's tough to be the Rangers. That's good. That's better than most. So what was your first job? Did your parents make you work when you were like younger? I mean, first job, new check from somebody else other than your parents.
I was 13 or 14 working at a convenience store, a Martha's Vineyard, the Katama General Store was the name of it. Pretty much just keeping the fridge packed and breaking down boxes, and then eventually worked my way up to cashier. I've done every job that you can think of. I've worked at Stop and Shop as a cashier and bag boy. I've been a camp counselor. I've been a chef.
You'd be a good camp counselor.
I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing that.
I went
that.
To camp when I was younger. Not a lot, but I went to camp. And yeah, I could see you'd be a good camp counselor. What was the other one after camp counselor?
I was a line chef.
Is this like at Hardee's or where?
No, at like a 4-star restaurant. I would just make the Caesar salads.
Really?
Yeah, the Caesar salads and the crab cakes.
Did you wear gloves?
And the French onion soup. I don't remember.
That's all I needed to know.
I don't think I did wear gloves. No. I was a bouncer, and my boss would be like, "Oh, this guy's too drunk. You got to kick him out." And I'd go up to these guys and be like, "Hey, man, you got to go." And they'd be like, "What are you going to do about it?" And I'd be like, "Nothing. I'm just going to ask you very, very nicely right now. Please don't ruin my night."
Was that a bar, or was it?
This was at a bar in Falmouth, Massachusetts. Yeah. The funniest job I've ever had was, and this only lasted for 2 days. I was a live infomercial salesman, so I was selling microfiber cleaning cloths, and I would drive to a mall like 2 hours away from my home. It was 100% commission. I didn't sell a single one, so I lost money doing this for 2 days, which is why I quit. But I would go around to just people in a store, and I'd be like, "I'm about to have a demonstration in the corner in 10 minutes if you'd like to watch." And then I would just spill something, and then I just clean it up in front of them with the microfiber cleaning cloth. And not a single person ever bought one. So I quit. I've been a mover. I've done a ton of things.
That's highly impressive. I can totally visualize this happening. And you're how old when you're doing this?
My work experiences started when I was 13 or 14. And then I got into TV professionally at 24. So,
right, so
you know,
in
all
between
the,
there
yeah,
somewhere. They just I can totally there, see that
the,
going down.
The infomercial salesman, I think, was my sophomore year of college.
Oh, gosh, that is so funny. What's the Nate Poit superpower? Like, what can you do? Like, yeah, I can do that pretty well. I'm not being braggadocious or anything. Like, yeah, everybody's got a superpower. What's yours?
I think that it's my ability to connect with people. Mm-hmm. I've been told that when I talk to people that, you know, I make them feel valued and, you know, I'm really listening to what they're saying and I care about them. And it's genuine. I really do. I have a connection with people, even those that I only see every once in a while. You know, obviously I have my family and my best friends that I talk to all the time, but I really try to develop special relationships, and I think I'm pretty good at it.
No, I think that comes across on air. I mean, I think the people who thrive on air, they're engaging, they got a degree of charisma, and people, they like hearing from you, right? But even though it's not a two-way communication when you're on television, you're still... I can see that in you. I totally buy that.
Hardest thing, and thank you for saying that, the hardest thing for getting used to television is you don't have emotional feedback.
Right.
If you are talking to someone, you can sort of read if, all right, like maybe I'm losing their attention. This story's going on a bit too long. I'm going to wrap things up. You can't see that when you're looking into a lens. Or if you make a joke, you have no idea if it lands. You know, you just kind of have to trust yourself. So that took a little bit of getting used to, but I think I'm there now.
Yeah. No, you're right. There's live, you know, being in Congress, running for Congress, being in politics, you get a lot of vivid live feedback. Sometimes you want it, sometimes you don't. But yeah,
I'm sure.
That happens in spades. Yeah. Do you have a pet growing up?
I did not. My best friend had a black lab. And I loved her. Her name was Angel. But no, like I said, my mom had her hands full with us four boys, and there were talks about getting a dog, but I think my parents maybe didn't trust us to actually do all the work, and they thought
it's going to be all mom's effort.
Exactly. Yeah. And she was thinking, well, I got my hands full with these four maniacs anyway.
I could see that. Pineapple on pizza. Yes or no?
No.
Okay, good. So you making up for that Bieber comment?
That was the one.
Now you're good.
Okay, all right, good.
That was an equalizer right there, because it's really important
to
this show.
I'm back to even par.
Yes, you're back. Yes, after a really bad double bogey, you are like...
Just got an eagle.
You birdied that one, maybe even an eagle. Yeah, very good, very good. All right, last two questions. Favorite menu item at Taco Bell?
Not a big Taco Bell guy. I honestly couldn't even name... what it is. I've had Taco Bell and I enjoy it. Generally, I don't feel that good after I eat it, so I don't have it very often. But it's one of those, I want to say it's called a Crunchwrap Supreme.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You got that right.
That's the circular one, right? It's the soft shell tortilla on the outside, a little bit crunchy on the inside.
I don't have that one, but yeah. Okay, well, that's fair enough. And the equally as important question is best advice you ever got.
Best advice I ever got. Well, it took me a long time to get a TV job, and I think this is the best advice I've ever got. It's definitely up there. I struck out for well over 100 jobs, and like I said, I always wanted to do this, and it was difficult starting in sports because if you were to start in news, or if you do start in news, newsrooms have, depending on the size of the newsroom, but they have a lot more open news reporter positions than they do sports reporter positions. These local stations have just like two people in the sports department.
Right.
So I was really, really struggling to get a job, and I was seeing my friends do pretty well in tech sales, and I was very, very close to abandoning the dream and going into tech sales. And a man who is like a second father to me, his brother actually, at like a holiday party, I was talking to him. His name's Jim O'Connor. And I was telling him my story and how I was having a hard time getting a job and thinking about, you know, abandoning the dream. And he just told me, he was like, "You've always wanted to do this. You can always go back into tech sales. If you leave TV now, you're never going back into TV. And don't feel like you need to be rushed. You got all the time in the world. You're 23, 24 years old. See it through." And it's not that my dad hadn't told me that, or, you know, his brother, Frank O'Connor. They had all told me similar things, but for whatever reason, sometimes it's just like, the way one person says it, it finally gets through to you.
Yeah.
And that was the moment that I was like, I am not quitting no matter what. I'm getting at least one job in TV and seeing how this goes. And I just think back to how close I was to quitting, and now seeing how things worked out, it's unbelievable to me. And I'm the most blessed guy in the world, and I'm so grateful for the advice that Jim gave me and all the good fortune that I've had since then. And like I said, I'm really the luckiest guy in the world, living my dream.
You know, that's great advice. And it does often take somebody kind of outside the family, somebody who just kind of looks you in the eye at just the right moment, just the right way to give you, kind of bolster the confidence and buoy you up and say, "Hey, yeah, don't give up now." You know, I can't remember who it was we were talking to, and it's like, so many people, they get in the water and they want to swim to the island, and they get 3/4 of the way, they get 80% of the way there, and then they turn back and swim all the way back. Yeah. It's like, if they had just kept going, they could have gotten that last 15-20% of the way there.
The man who enjoys running will run farther than the man who enjoys the destination.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I think that's great advice. And
I got to give my dad a plug as well. So I was like, is that the number one best advice I've ever had? Up there as well was before my first varsity basketball game ever. I was really, really nervous, and I didn't know if I was good enough to play at that level. And this is just more simple, much quicker story. But my dad just said, "Hey, Nate, if you play your butt off, everything will be okay." And that really does kind of sum up everything. When I got to Fox, I was, you know, really trying to prove myself, and there's nerves that come with that. And if I play my butt off, I think I'll be okay. You know, if I prepare, if I work as hard as I possibly can, things generally go pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I got similar type of advice. My wife and I are thinking, praying about running for Congress, you know, put your name out on a ballot, and it's scary and all that. And I thought, when I finally became comfortable with the idea that I might lose, that life would be fine and I'd go on and I'd still be married and still have kids and I'd figure out the next chapter if I lost, then I was really good at what I was doing, because I let all that pressure just kind of shed off and just let her rip, like, you know, we were talking about earlier. And it's great advice. Seems like very similar to what your dad said, you know, before that game.
It allows you to play free.
Yeah. And then be you and just don't overthink it. Just go be the very best that you can.
Yeah.
And it's very similar to the advice actually Sean Hannity gave me when I was starting out. Sean's been very, very helpful to me and very good. And he's like, just talk these from your heart. Just don't do it like you're running for some office. Everybody will sniff it out and you'll be terrible.
Yeah.
Like, just talk for who you are. That's why you got hired here, and just let it go. And I think that's exactly right.
So, authenticity is definitely key.
Yeah. People sniff it out. Well, go enjoy your time with your brothers and your family and whoever else is on that trip, and get warm and recharge your batteries, because there's going to be something else stupid going on or disastrous or something interesting that we all want to hear about, and we'll see you on the air before we know it. But thanks for joining us on this podcast, Nate Foy. Really do appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me, Jason.
All right. I told you, Nate is just a good, fun guy, kind of guy you want to hang out with. Takes the job very seriously, works hard, works smart, can't ask for any more than that. He puts a smile on his face and gets after it. And you're going to see a lot more of him at Fox, and rightfully so. So I really appreciate you listening. I hope you can rate the podcast, subscribe to it so it shows up each week. I want to remind people you can listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app. Go check out the other podcasts at foxnewspodcast.com. And I hope you join us next week. Again, subscribe to it, rate it, and we'll be back with more next week. I'm Jason Chaffetz. This has been Jason in the House.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network, subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.